The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, around this time of year, Kathy, we always have Lag BaOmer kind of feeling about things. And pre-Lag BaOmer, it's usual to find kids, big kids and little kids, running around the streets looking for fuel for their bonfires, normally with a supermarket trolley being pushed around the streets, looking for any scrap of wood they can find in order to keep until Lag BaOmer, which this year falls on Thursday night. Unfortunately, that kind of atmosphere is not happening this year. Bonfires have been outlawed. No bonfires will be allowed. This is part of the corona restrictions we're being told, even though the rest of Israel is really open for business. As far as corona is concerned, very, very few restrictions now in place, really, on the back of corona. We've seen hotels absolutely packed out. Eilat, you can't find a room in the whole of the city of Eilat. You can't find a restaurant booking in Eilat. It's just really, really crazy how people have taken up and really taken advantage of the reopening. But unfortunately, no Lag BaOmer bonfires this year. And so scraps of wood are being seen around the streets freely. Nobody's grabbing hold of them. Very, very unusual situation for this time of year, I have to say.
Hmm. Yeah, it's these things that we're starting to feel the loss. Right. Anthony, let's just get on to some other stories. Have there been any further rockets since the 40 that you received since Friday night?
So the last rocket that we experienced was in the early hours of yesterday morning, and nothing since then. And during the course of yesterday, the Israeli security cabinet met and they issued there were two decisions really being made. The first decision was that the fishing zone in the Gaza Strip or off the coast of the Gaza Strip has been completely closed until further notice. So that's kind of a retaliatory action that's been taken by the Israeli security cabinet in order to somehow respond to this very severe outburst of rocket fire that we experienced over the weekend. The second thing that the security cabinet decided was that they would authorize Prime Minister Netanyahu and Defense Minister Benny Gantz to instruct the IDF to react very, very strongly if there were further rocket launches experienced. Now, in terms of exactly what operations were authorized, we don't really know. What we know is that the IDF did apparently present a number of different operational scenarios which would target Gaza's ruling Hamas terror group, which Israel still holds responsible for all of these cross-border aggressions, even though we do know that most of the action was really taken by Islamic Jihad in terms of the rockets that were fired, not by Hamas operatives themselves. Nonetheless, the cabinet has said that the action will be taken against Hamas targets. The IDF presented a whole host of different operational scenarios. I'm guessing that certain of the scenarios were selected to be put into action and to be ready for activating as soon as possible on the instruction of the Prime Minister and the Minister of Defense. And the cabinet has said that those two individuals will be able to decide whenever they feel it is necessary to simply push the button on whatever operational plans have been put in place. Since then, no rocket fire. So I'm not quite sure if one can link one action to the other or whether Hamas felt that they've just done what they need to do. We do understand that there were messages being conveyed via the United Nations channels to say that from Hamas, at least, to say that they didn't really want to open up a new front, that they didn't really want this to escalate to some sort of an open operation. But the point is that Israel was also relaying messages back through these diplomatic channels saying that the ball is really now in Hamas's court. If they are able to rein in Islamic Jihad and the other terror groups that are operating within the Gaza Strip and prevent them from firing further rockets, and if they're prepared to take some action in order to return the peace to return quiet to the border area, then that will be one statement. And of course, Israel won't respond. But in the event that there is further rocket fire, then Israel stands ready to take more severe action. And of course, the Security Cabinet would have thought about the fact that more severe action by Israel will inevitably escalate the situation, because then it becomes a tit-for-tat situation with a response and then a reaction to that, that particular response. So it goes backwards and forwards and could potentially escalate into something a lot more severe. So those, I'm sure, will all have been taken into consideration. But I think the main idea behind yesterday's cabinet decision was to try to send a message to Hamas more than to say, well, we're ready to take action. I think the IDF stands ready to take action almost at any moment in time. So the message that we're ready to escalate things shouldn't have come as any surprise to anybody, but I think it was just designed as some sort of a message to Hamas to try and calm things down. For now, at least, it's worked.
All right, let's move on. Anthony, the leak of an interview with Iranian foreign minister, he has shed some interesting light on internal Iranian politics and also brought in John Kerry. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a very fascinating interview, not only because of the Kerry angle, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but more because of it gives us a little bit of insight into some of the internal issues that the Iranian government is dealing with. And one of the lasting kind of takeaways that I have from looking at the text of this particular interview that was conducted with Javad Zarif, the Iranian foreign minister, and was actually leaked by the New York Times as well as Iran International, is that what he was sending the message as the Iranian foreign minister, he seems to have so little influence over Iranian foreign policy. And that for me came as a huge surprise, because I thought that he was very influential in determining how Iran was behaving towards the outside world. Obviously, this particular interview conducted quite some time ago. But the message that comes out from Javad Zarif is that the Iranian foreign ministry really has very little influence over what Iran does on the international diplomatic front. And most of that comes from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, and in particular was very much influenced by the Quds Force commander Qasem Soleimani, who we all know was assassinated by the U.S. forces last year. And the tension between Zarif and Soleimani was palpable in this particular interview, how Zarif felt that Soleimani really was riding roughshod over him in determining what should be done for Iran on the international diplomatic front. And in fact, it was the Iranian Revolutionary Guard commander who was really calling the shots about what Iran should be doing next. And it seems as if Zarif was really divorced from some of the events that were going on a day-to-day basis. And in his words, he had to find out about them from the then U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry. Now, what he attributed to John Kerry was the fact that Kerry was apparently updating him about Israeli action that was being carried out in Syria. Some attacks, quite a number of attacks, in fact, that Israel apparently was reputed to have carried out in Syria, and that Zarif was really being updated on this, more than 200 attacks, according to this particular interview, that U.S. Foreign Secretary or Secretary of State John Kerry had briefed Zarif on, which raises two very, very interesting things. First of all, the fact that Zarif himself wasn't getting briefing from within the Iranian government about what Iran knew was happening in Syria. That was, for me, very, very fascinating. But also, that it seems as if, though, in spite of, you know, some of the tensions with the U.S. government and so on, that John Kerry was really a source of major information to the Iranian government, which
actually,
I think,
unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that would have come as major concern to the Israeli government, because it's not only about John Kerry and what happened during the Obama administration, but it also reflects to some degree on the current Biden administration, because many of those people who were involved in the Obama administration then, back then, under Secretary of State John Kerry, are also now somehow involved in the Biden administration. Many of them have just moved up a level and continue to be in the administration today. So I suppose the question now is less about what happened then and more about what could be happening in the age, in the current day, in the current situation with the Biden administration, and how much information that Israel is giving to the United States is ultimately finding its way to Iran. So that, I think, is a major concern right now and has probably given the Israeli government some food for thought about what they should really be sharing with the American government.
Anthony, I mean, this isn't the first time that you're finding information that America has been shared with inappropriate parties, whoever those parties may be. There was something with about Trump that he was sharing information. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember that Trump shared information
very
on
sensitive
an ongoing basis.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't exactly, you know, the world's most secure vessel for keeping sensitive information, that's for sure. But
one would expect John Kerry to, though. I mean, are you concerned at all about this?
I think it is a concern, but it also, I think, reflects back on how much Israel is willing to share with the United States. Now, in an ordinary day, one would say, well, look, the United States is an ally of Israel's, and when Israel is planning to carry out some sort of an attack, when Israel is planning, for example, to explode some sort of a remote device at the Natanz nuclear plant, that, I mean, as an everyday citizen of Israel, it would be my expectation that Israel would share that information with the United States fairly openly. Now, in the light of what we've heard and seen in this interview, we can understand to some degree why Israel might not share that with the United States, in spite of having this really, really close ally between the two countries, because you think that, you know, information that's shared with the United States is kept there in secret and that it won't go to the wrong places. But apparently that's not the case at all. And this is just some of the world of international diplomacy, where one assumes that information is safe in the hands of certain administrations and people. And in reality, it really isn't.
Yeah. Anthony, that's where we leave it today. You're back with Howard tomorrow. But thank you so much. It's always lovely speaking to you and very insightful. Thank you.
Enjoy your public holiday, and I will be back tomorrow as usual.
Thank you so much. God bless. Bye-bye. That's Anthony Reich. He's our Israel correspondent. You can also go check out his blog. It's called Comments from the Edge.